warm and cozy. There's a little bit more hot up here, but I don't think it's going to be hot here that's generated from up here. I think it'll definitely be warm, but it'll be incisive. So welcome again to our church whānau, especially to you, Liz, who's coming to visit us today, and Graham. No, my honey, my welcome to our space and our people, our place. Lovely to have you here. And thanks for driving all the way up from Timaru this morning in pretty foul weather, to be fair, making that effort as well to be amongst us. And Caroline and Janet, you are part of our whānau here, both of you, but it's lovely to have you contributing in this space this morning as well. I thought a good starting place might be just for you all to paint a little bit of a, give us a little bit of a mihi, something about who you are that we can bring to the table of conversation today that will help people to understand a little bit of who you are. And maybe one fun fact or something that people won't perhaps will surprise them about you. Maybe we can start, we'll go across so that we maximise our time. So Janet, would you like to start?
Kia ora koutou, everyone. It is just lovely to be here and see some friendly faces out there. I work in a service that provides support for Glory of Our Leavers in education transitions. So people, when they leave, they often don't know what the choices are for their children and they're wondering what might they do. A lot of them opt to homeschool and others are tentatively putting their toes into the state school system or Christian schools if they happen to have that as an opportunity. So it is a real privilege to work in this space, and I have a beautiful colleague who's come to support me down the back, Jemima. She and I work together as a team in this work, and it's just such a blessing that she's here today. Fun fact about me. I have been in the South Island with my husband for 3.5 years, and for that 3.5 years, we have lived in our caravan. but we are looking at buying a house quite soon, so that's exciting.
Nice, Janet. I'm Liz Gregory, so I run the Glory of Our Leavers Support Trust. I work alongside with and in connection with Janet and Jemima, in that we would be the main referring agency for the service, and we advocated for the needs of leavers. And this is one way that the government actually put their hand into their pocket and funded this education support system. So we're pretty thrilled about that. I would say, do we have a reasonable understanding, Glory of Ale? If we say Glory of Ale, have we got anyone here who's like, I just have no idea what you're talking about? That's all right, we'll come back to that later then. A fun fact about me, well, actually there's a few. One is I see over here what I call Middleton Row, and that's people that I recognise from my days teaching at Middleton Grange. So I'm Timaru, but I did spend more than a decade here in Christchurch and loved it here. And another fun fact, if you were to give me a Christmas present, the best thing you could buy me, just saying, is a Makita cordless power tool. Because I love building, creating, dreaming, making spaces. And when I say to my husband, I've got an idea, he says, uh-oh. Yeah, okay, so I'm a bit crafty and also I enjoy singing. So I've just rejoined the Christchurch City Barbershop Chorus. So we're heading off to Hawaii soon for some world champs. So that keeps me a bit, you know, alive.
Kia ora koutou, I'm called Caroline Tokuingama. I'm Caroline, and how I'm connected to this work is I had the unfortunate experience of being a child at the Centrepoint community when I was 7, and I've spoken here about that before, many of you would have heard about that. That led me to running a project for about 10 years called the Centrepoint Restoration Project, which was aimed at the child survivors of the community and opening up the experience of what happened to them and trying to kind of build restoration with the first generation, their parents and their own experiences, because a lot of the truth of what they experienced was sort of shoved down. And that's finished now, but now I'm co-leading an organisation called the Cult Informed Professional Network, or CIPIN, which is fairly new here in New Zealand, and it's a network of 50-plus New Zealand and Australian professional people who are working to kind of lift the profile of this work and develop their own understanding of it better, and getting advocacy and all that sort of stuff that happens when professionals get involved in a topic. And I've had plus I co-lead a podcast, which I always talk about, Cult Chat with Liz and Lindy, who's not here. And I've had many, many conversations with many, many survivors of many different high-control or culty groups over the years. And I'm a doctor. Sometimes we talk about cults in my clinical work as well. Oh, and I also work in a kind of prison ward, actually, so that's interesting, at Hill Morton Hospital, where it's kind of a prison, but it's a hospital. So I'm working in a legal environment where people's choices and freedoms are stripped away. That's interesting as well. The interesting thing about me is I have got 4 older brothers and sisters and 4 younger brothers and sisters, 4 brothers, 4 sisters. I'm smack dab in the middle. We're not all biologically completely related, but we're all one big complicated family. One of them's in the room. And Shauna, hello. And that's interesting, because so many people who experience high control groups end up having either lots of children or being one of lots of children. So I totally get that bit.
That's great. Well, that's really helped to fill out, you know, a larger picture of who you are, both in the context of this conversation today about this idea of restoring and a connection and care for people who have found their lives, you know, they've been are currently involved or have been involved in cults and high control groups. And we'll tease it out a little bit more, because there's quite a bit more underneath that. I think there can be this idea, popular idea, which is affixed to the word cult, which doesn't capture the nuance of what the phrase high control group does. So we're looking forward to hearing you talk some more about that together. But perhaps then, moving on, is there anything else out of your, I guess, life journey, world experience that you bring to the table of conversation today that you think is particularly important or has been formative for you in coming to talk about this topic?
I wasn't born in a high control group or a culty group. Through my childhood, I was friends with a lot of cult members, Jehovah Witness friends, People of the Way, Exclusive Brethren. These were people who in my school looked a little bit out, fringe to the edges. And I was a Christian, and I often found myself migrating into that space. So I just looked back at that with some interest. So basically I had a wonderful Christian home and upbringing, went into school teaching, then owned a business, and I think made sense. I started this charity and I realised that all of these skills that I'd developed along the way have actually sort of coalesced together, and I feel like this is where the Lord was leading me all those years into this amazing work. So I think it's just important to note that, you know, leaving a cult isn't just like leaving a church. So it's a completely different journey that I think a lot of people don't understand. The needs are quite high. And so I found myself I'm a good talker. And so by establishing a lot of relationships with a lot of people over the years, I'm just a real people person. I somehow am able to draw on amazing depth of networks. I find out that someone's leaving Gloria Vale on, you know, it was last week Wednesday, and they want a house by, you know, this week Thursday. They want it in this particular area, and I'm like, no problem. And, you know, I just get on the phone. I'm like, do you know someone? Yeah. Next thing, look, three days in, we've got the house set. They're going to move in by about Thursday. Haven't got the furniture yet, but we'll have that rustled up by then. That's no problem. We'll set them up with an entire house, and it won't be hard. They'll find some work. We'll sort them out with some finances. So there's just a real, I think, I've got a bit of a practical back, and so nothing much is a problem. We can always solve a problem. I think those attitudes are great when you're dealing with people who have a lot of needs.
Have you thought about tackling global warming? It just sounds like you're highly motivated.
Are you suggesting I've got lots of hot air? Surely not.
Janet or Caroline, is there anything that you would want to say, you know, around?
That was an interesting question that you posed to us, Sean, and I think that without realising it, that experiences that I've had probably over the past 10 years or so have brought me to a place where I have more of a understanding of spiritual harm, having been in a church environment which was, you don't realise it when you first start, but as things go on, you start to realise that it's not quite as it should be, and the people are being harmed and scriptures are being perverted and things are being said that are manipulative. And I was in, my husband and I were in a church like that a few years ago for a while, and some people that I knew really well really struggled with harm in that environment. And also having worked in, been in lots of churches because we've moved around a lot over the years. Phil was in the army for a long time, so that was the start of a journey of being a bit transient, I suppose, in a way, and we've kind of carried that on a little bit. But we were in Tauranga for 20 years, and I worked in a Christian school there, and there were things that were happening in that place where vulnerable communities were struggling, and that for me was a real, I had to actually stand up and be someone that I didn't realise I actually was or could be. And so that was also a time of preparation now, as I look back on it, for what we're doing now. And, just a sense that vulnerable people matter, and I have a little tiny taste of that in my own life.
There's a couple of things that really affected my background, and that the first is the most obvious, that I was a child at Centrepoint. But as well as being a child, I was the friend of children at Centrepoint. And it is, for me, the thing that whenever this work has over the years got felt too heavy, too hard, too unrewarding, it has been the knowledge and of what it's like to be an adult now with that childhood experience and the people who I've known who've literally just not been able to leave me. So knowing those people and having those experiences as well has been very hard to let go of. And I think one thing I would ask as you guys sit and listen to us talk is a slight reframing of what many of you probably already have, if you haven't been listening to me a lot, is that so many of the people that are in or have been in cults were never recruited. If they had the experience they had was being born into by their parents or their grandparents, or if they were recruited, it didn't look like recruitment because it was their sister or their brother or their father who drew them in, or their best friend. So it doesn't really look like recruitment when you're going after, you're being invited along to something by someone you love and care for. So that doesn't really look like the package. So that's just something I'd ask that you kind of shift that thinking from that classic recruitment meme to one that isn't really that at all. And the other experience I had was when we were in Wellington, some years ago, we were at a pretty charismatic church. I wouldn't call it high control at all, but what it was highly emotionally focused and highly emotionally driven, and the people at the front would often exhort people to think about how they felt. They'd create the context where there was strong emotion in the room, and then the conversation was very targeted around really emotional ideas, and honestly, I'd walk away and go, I think I was just told to feel good, to believe hard, and to do what they wanted me to do. There was none of this. So the critical thinking in that church was really disengaged. And that's also part of the problem here, is a deliberate breakdown in people's ability to think. Mm-hmm. And that is really very prevalent in many faith communities. Don't think, just feel. And while you're doing it, follow the leader.
Well, that's a good segue into my next question, Caroline. So thank you for that and interesting reflection, because there's this observation that religious cults and high control, or particularly religious cults, use their scriptures, their belief systems, their spiritual practices, their structures and systems of life together to actually, in ways that are harmful and disempowering of people and dangerous in that sense. So what I have been wondering in relation to this, how does your involvement with people who are and providing support to people who are either in these groups, types of groups, or looking to exit and find a way beyond, life beyond, how has that affected your own faith and spirituality?
That is a very good question, and I thought I'd loop back around to just give a little more context to the specific Glory of Ale scene, if that's okay. Hands up if you know how many people, or just call out a number, were living in Glory of Ale around 10 years ago. How big did it get at its height? Any ideas? 500, it was more? Got to about 600. Okay, so the next question, how many people do you think are still living at Glory of Ale? No, I won't ask you that one. How many people have left in the last decade? So we started at 600, how many have left? More than 200? Not 400? Yeah, around 320 probably. So here's the maths for you. If there were 600 at the height and 320 have left, how many are left in Glory of Ale? Good, I'm glad you are. You a professor of mathematics? Right, because I hope you didn't do simple maths there. You're right, because they so many have left, but they kept having babies and replacing their population because their average age is 12. And so there are currently low 500s left, and I'll have an exciting day when it gets just below 400. We're not far off it. About 25 to 30 leave every year, and this year we're at 54. It's a big year, a lot of families and a lot of singles leaving Glory of Ale. And so it's had a profound impact on the way my husband and I live our lives, and it's definitely had an impact on our faith. I guess I've become more aware of, allergic to to control mechanisms, allergic to very much the emotional, feel me. I think we need to have some logic, some grappling, the ability to look at scripture, understand it. And definitely not a faith that rests on platitudes, not one running around encouraging people with just have faith or it will be okay, it will work out in the end. I think these are very lightweight ways that Christians can be really meaningful, but there's a lot of Christian cliches out there, and I make a real point to not get involved in those. I think it's around the authority issues, how people are misusing authority. And so I think my faith has grown much deeper, especially Glory of Ale is such an open mission field. And literally, there are people there who honestly want to serve the Lord. They just have been born into a system and haven't realised that every scripture pretty much has had a twist on it. So what a great mission field. So we've been involved in mission work and outreach, phones going in, podcasts with sermons on them, tracks. There's a whole collection of people that have been involved in the ministry. And it's not just us, we've got a whole church family that got involved 13 years ago. We've landed big families of 13 and 15 that's our home, flooded with clothing and furniture and whatever. And so our whole church family has really got involved in loving people who leave Glory of Ale. That's us on Sunday afternoons having hospitality at our home every couple of Sundays. We've got groups of people sitting around integrating leavers into just life, conversations. That's our minister in the corner sitting there with a group of people who've left Glory of Ale and others asking questions. And I think that's important. You need to be able to have faith spaces where asking the hard questions and being able to have differences of opinion and let's search the scriptures, but it's relaxed, it's casual, but it's really important work. So it's definitely been a deepening exercise. What is salvation? What does faith look like? How have Glory of Ale twisted works-based salvation? What is grace? These things are vitally important for people coming out of religious cults who want to maintain a faith. It's a long answer.
I'm just my answer to that question kind of echoes a lot of what you just said. So I'm just going to read out what I wrote. I've found myself needing to examine deeply held convictions over the last few years to see if they stand up to scrutiny, and realise that some of them don't, and developed a horror of spiritual language and cliches in the process. when I'm working with the families that we meet, I'm really careful about how I use religious language now, and conscious of how loaded phrases, as you were talking about, can really cause harm. They can be really triggering to people who've heard them in a context that where the message actually hasn't stood up, and they have felt harmed and they have experienced pain, and that hasn't been acknowledged by the environment that they have been part of. So yeah, that's been the change that I've had to grapple with, and to try to make sure that I don't fall into those it's very easy to say those things, isn't it? They just roll up our tongues when we've been brought up in the church. And I've worked in Christian schools for most of my teaching career, and so you just hear the stuff all the time, and it's actually really not helpful in a lot of cases.
Caroline.
I would say that, wonderful answers, both of you, that it's made me examine this space a lot, because I've got an extremely good foil of which to measure Ilam's health as a community, and repeatedly you guys come up in the top. Okay, so you've been thoroughly assessed by at least one New Zealand cult expert, and not finding too many problems. The coffee is sometimes could be better, but otherwise wonderful. So yeah,
coffee is sinful in Glory of Ale, so you just, that's heresy.
yeah, so I think it's made me think a lot about what a healthy faith community looks like, and how you can I like the fact that you can come in here and really have almost everything about faith and belief unclear, and you can have all these doubts, and in a high control or culty groups, whatever the doctrine is, whether it's about sci-fi like Scientology or Eastern mysticism or Christianity based, doubts, questioning, not okay. You will lose everything if you are foolish enough to do that outwardly. And so I love the fact that this is a space where doubts have a home, and yeah, you don't realise it, but you guys already are extremely, there's so many safeguarding practices that are in here, inherent in the very philosophy of this community. So that's not to say that we shouldn't be looking harder and going deeper for how we can be cult safe, or cult proof, but yeah, it's made me very allergic, and therefore drawn towards anything that doesn't allow these really harmful mechanisms within them, yeah, which we'll go into more.
When we were having a conversation about what we might cover today, we realised that we're way too ambitious. I mean, we would love to have had a whole weekend seminar with you all, with workshops and associated things and others involved, but this is like a dip in into the ocean. So we're going to be water skiing a little bit, and occasionally we'll, like I said, maybe get down to get some kinner and some mussels that lie a little bit lower, some goodies to bring up. But I'll just miss the next question, because I think there's an element in which some of that has been covered and there's some others there. But when we talk about religious cults and high control groups, what are some of the key characteristics, both from your observation as well as the wider research, that you would identify as maybe some of the more significant and commonplace ones?
That's great. So I'll do the school teacher thing in me here. Oh, look, I forgot to say that we are working currently out of shipping container converted offices on our property. That was a community build project who helped us. So we do have staff with the Glory of Our Lever Support Trust as well. Right, let's just jump on. Oh, here we go. That was just a few pictures of Glory of Ours. So I was supposed to do those before to show you all the children. It's good just to look at their businesses, that they're an all-encompassing group with schools and meals and a very strict community environment. It is interesting, because I am pretty certain that I got rid of all of those. So what on earth have I done? Alrighty. So I guess it was looking at the broad characteristics of groups, and something that we just need to be aware of is that cults aren't just weird religions, or that they're isolated, or that you live in communes, or that you're naive or not intelligent, or that maybe even that you can recognise them when people walk among you, or that cults are a certain size. So we do have to drop off those sort of preconceptions. And we're looking at four general categories of cults. You actually have religious and spiritual ones. That would be your Glory Veil. You mentioned Jim Jones before, Exclusive Brethren, Jehovah Witnesses. But actually you get political and ideological cults. You get therapy and personal growth cults. That would be more like the Centrepoint. You get commercial and business cults. So think about Nexium. Yes, so these are there's loads of categories of cults, and I think the key is that we are able to identify what's below the wrapping paper. And I can see there's definitely something funny about this PowerPoint slides that I have sent to you. They do not seem to match up with the ones that I got prepared. Oh dear, for the weekend. I see what you said. I got a whole special one ready just for this. That's okay. I've attached the wrong one. Clearly, I need an assistant. So that's all right. So I guess the questions are, you're looking at those key characteristics of your unquestioning authority. Authoritarianism really is one of the key indicators. That's not, there's a difference. You can have authoritarianism inside all sorts of contexts. It can be a very conservative church with authoritarianism. It can be a Pentecostal church with authoritarianism. It can be a business cult. But it's about the nature of the coercion and the control that's going on. So less about the beliefs.
What's authoritarianism?
That is basically do it my way or the highway. Very strict, trying to, strip from people their ability to make decisions. People in authoritarian groups, you know, it's a very very dogmatic way of trying to own and dominate other people. And in a group like Glory Veil, it just extends into everything, what you wear, who you can marry, where you work, and your life is just totally consumed in the end by a group.
Totalism's another word. Everything exists within this social organisation that solves everything about your life. Any question you have, it is solved there. It's closed and you can't get out of it. It's a closed social system, otherwise known as a self-sealing system. So any question you have circles back to the answer being within the group. And another term I've heard recently is manufactured dependency. I really love that. When you strip away, much like when I'm working in my job in the prison, when you strip away, not the prison, hospital. It feels like a prison sometimes. Yeah, it's actually a hospital, but it's a forensic ward, so it's locked. You're stripping away people's freedoms and their choices, in this case legally, and for good reasons, therapeutic reasons, safety reasons. In a cult, you're stripping away their freedoms, their choices, in order to make them dependent on the organisation and strip away any ability to access anything outside of it. So isolation is also part of authoritarianism, taking away options on the outside.
And you become less you. It's more about, they will say we, but really it's an image of the I, the cult leader. You're really being formed in his or her image. And a lot of fear is used to maintain the obedience, loss of personal autonomy, suppression of critical thinking. So there's a whole package that goes with cults. But we talked about the words earlier, high control, thought control, high cost group. I quite like that one. A lot of you lose a lot to join a group like this, but you think they're solving your problem, meeting a need, but there's a high cost to leave these groups. And so that's often a helpful way to envisage what they are. And so you get various models. If anyone's interested in sort of the academic side, Stephen Hassan came up with a BITE model, the different types of control, and also healthy continuums. So if you get on their websites, or unhealthy continuums for people and for groups and for churches as well. So ultimately, though, they're just using those two words, coercive control. They're aiming to have a wrapping paper that looks very pretty. It might be religion or business, but underneath it all, you've got coercively controlling behaviours, and this is where the danger sits with cults. It used to be in the old days that people would say, if there was a church with a particular heresy, they would say, you're a cult, because you had an aberrant view or an unorthodox view of something in Scripture. But the work has moved on from the religious space, not so much about the beliefs. That would be called potentially heresy. You're better to look at culty in the terms of social behaviours rather than actual beliefs.
There's just been a report tabled by the Victorian Parliament they did an inquiry into cult and fringe groups, and it's just been tabled on the Victorian government website. That inquiry, which has run for about 6 months, I think, really focused on, they said it was belief neutral, that this is about behaviours. And I think mostly that's true, though there are plenty of cults that have beliefs that it doesn't matter how the behaviours change, it's still highly harmful. Like Centrepoint had some very, very harmful beliefs. But that's how the Victorian Inquiry have chosen to take this, in a belief-neutral way. And the way I look at it, because all of the argument about should we look closely at political reform to make these kind of behaviours that happen in high-control groups illegal, there's a lot of the whole freedom of religion, freedom of belief argument that comes in and really shuts down any kind of safeguarding mechanisms that happen at scale to protect people from these groups. And as if you make it about being belief neutral, then you can sidestep that issue. And the way I look at it is that we don't say because there are harmful marriages that we should stop marriage. We don't do that. We go, no, marriage is, as an institution, is a good thing. We just want to make sure they're safe. So we don't want unsafe marriages. And it's much the same as when it comes to groups. Yes, we can expect a higher degree of safety within, so that we can all participate in social organisations that are safe. So it's not about belief, it's about the control and the harm that happens in coercively controlling groups, much like harmful marriages versus healthy marriages.
People will often say when they are involved in a group, or even people sitting on the edge of it, that their experience, you know, or those in the experience of the group is not such as it's being described. That it doesn't feel harmful to them. It feels like love, it feels like care, it feels like human connection for a lot of people. They will say, and some will be saying that sincerely. So what response might you bring to somebody who says, well, look, you know, they are indicating this isn't really harmful for me, it's actually life-enhancing to be involved with this group or this, you know, whether it's religious or some other form of high control. It's brought great benefit to me. You know, I'm a better person, I'm a weller person, I'm a more flourishing person, even. They might use that kind of language. How do you engage with somebody who's sitting in that space, especially maybe if they're a friend or a relative or somebody who's in your circle of people whom you have are invested in and care about, and how might you respond to that? This is one of those kind of questions I've injected. So
off just, the cuff. Yeah. I think, and we'll probably come to it a bit later with some of your questions about what you don't say to people who are convinced that the group they're in is good for them. You don't sit there and aggressively argue with them or attack the group and necessarily the group's beliefs and ideas, because you end up, if it's a cultic group, you're ending up attacking them. So if you're just questioning the group's lead or the leader's ideas, you end up attacking them and their ideas because they're so fused with the group. So it's very hard. It's a bit like being infatuated in love. They say people who are sort of, we're talking more about recruits rather than people born in at this point, someone who's chosen to get involved in a group because they thought it was giving them some benefit. And there is often a lot of love bombing at that stage. So you might be looking at university, some of the cultic groups that go out and recruit from universities, a lot of love bombing, a lot of social interest and excitement. They're talking about a life that appeals to you and they say they've got it and they're all happy and it's all happy, joy. And you fall in love with that and with them. And to try and extract someone, how did your parents get on when you fell in love at 17 and 18 and you suggested that boyfriend might not be the best guy for you? You know, what did they do? They just went closer to that boyfriend, you know, because cults will attack the emotion of someone. You're not drawn into a cult through intellectual discussions. And so, you know, you've got to work very carefully and quietly and maintain interest in this person and spot when they're not flourishing and say, have you noticed that you are losing a lot of weight? I'm wondering how your sleep is. So you need to people in Glorivale say, oh, I just love it here, it's wonderful, and everyone cares for you. The minute they leave, they're like, oh, man, there is no love and care in that place. Nobody ever asked me how I was doing. No one came over and just offered to pray. They break down in tears when they go to a doctor and the doctor is a Christian doctor and says, do you mind if I pray with you? They come back and tell me, I have never in all my life had anyone offer to pray for me. And, you know, this one man said he was 50 years of age. He was in a bad state. He was still in Glorivale, and we got him help. And a lovely doctor prayed with him, and this guy just said, nobody in all my life has showed me so much care. A 15-minute appointment with a doctor. You know,
and it wasn't 15 minutes.
No, and the doctor would have given him more time. But, you know, it's just the point that they can be telling you that things are going well, but you learn to mask a lot when you are in groups like this. They generally don't care about you. They care about you becoming a member of the group and advancing the goals of the group. And you just need to stick in there and remain very connected and ask questions and don't let the distance form, because cultic groups always want to cut ties with friendships and family members on the outside.
I can relate to that too. Jemima and I recently have had probably three or four of the families that we've been working with. And when we've gone in to look at what they're doing in their homeschooling situations and been able to see that what they're doing is actually quite remarkable. It's amazing for people who have, and these are mums who've grown up in Glorivale, and so their own experience of education has been quite limited and quite traumatising, to be honest. And we have just been able to say to them, you're doing a great job. The resources you're using are incredible. The programs that you're putting together are amazing. You know your children really well. And they have just gone, nobody's ever said that to me before. We have never experienced anyone encouraging us. We don't hear those words.
Compliments are bad. It might create vanity and pride in you.
Yeah, and there's been tears, as you've said. These mums have just broken down because they've never, ever had anyone tell them that they're actually doing a good job.
That is true.
So when we're looking at the impacts on the lives of people who are looking to exit or looking for a way out or have come out, and you look at the way that their life within that group has impacted them, what are some of the common things that you see in terms of how their lives have been shaped and impacted by their life in a group like Glorivale or one of these other types of high control groups too? What are some of the common characteristics there?
Well, what I want to say, first of all, before Liz, I'm sure, will give a fabulous answer to this, is the enormous spectrum of harm. Someone who had a week on a course at Centrepoint, for instance, probably had quite a difficult experience, but that's really different from someone who was born and raised and left when they were 15. So, like, there's a wide range of experience. Some groups, like Glorivale, is an extremely harmful group. It, you know, it ticks all the boxes across all the spectrum of the research looking into the sort of harms. That is could be potentially quite different from an organisation where there aren't, you get to go to your own job and mix with other people. You get to go to a school and mix with other people. You may be allowed to have some kind of education versus what happens at Glorivale. So the spectrum is wide in harms. Some groups are extremely avoidant of doctors and demonise doctors, and they get no kind of antenatal care, they get no childhood screening, they get, you know, no preventative medical care, and they can end up being quite physically harmed versus other groups that don't have that kind of ideology around healthcare. So it's varied, and as much as you may learn from this conversation, another take home is don't make assumptions about the experiences that people have in these groups, because they're very varied.
Just in the context of talking about this, the recent documentary that has had exposure around, again, Glorivale, presenting itself as, in the advertising, a balanced view. Just, I'd appreciate, and others I'm sure too, with some comment on that, because certainly from some of the conversations I've had with people who are well informed, they have considerable response or reaction to that.
Yes, yeah. Well, Cult Chat episode 98 and 99, we invited John Reddy to come and speak about his thoughts on the recent doco. We're also opening up a section of our website on it because we had, you know, more than 20 or 30 leavers on the phone the very next day or that night or the following weeks letting us know what they thought about it. So we're going to be pulling those together. That was a perfect classic example of an opportunity for a group to platform to improve its image in the public sphere. And we watched it with leavers. And when John Reddy said he was pacing, he couldn't sit, it was true. He was in our lounge while we watched it. And we had other leavers up there just at the screen, like, that is such a lie. And, you know, just like this physical reaction when you try and hear harm minimised and then a promise of reform. But where's the evidence for this in the lives of, you know, those still in and those who've left? So, yeah, quite a lot of, upset over that. Certainly, yes, there have been some changes in Goreville and some better safeguarding practices and some reform, but nothing's come from the heart, and I think that's what upsets people who've left Goreville. There's no honest repentance. There's no, we are so sorry. Did you even hear the words, we're sorry, on a three-part episode? There were some acknowledgements, but look, what we're looking for is genuine, genuine regret and recognition and deep heartfelt apologies. These things are not forthcoming yet.
Just for those who are not keeping up, we're talking about the documentary called Devotion, which you can find on TV3, not Escaping Utopia, which was about 3 or 4 years ago, which leavers have a very different view on. So they're also three-part series. So
not to be confused with Goreville's three-part series that made the place look so amazing, people actually wanted to go and join it after that, but they didn't last more than a few weeks. So
so coming back to struggles and difficulties, and maybe Janet, you can, you've both actually covered a little bit of that, this observation that even recognising and receiving human care and how that has evoked, you know, tears and on the part of people. So this I guess, emotional disorientation, this emotional deficit, if you like, and my descriptor here, but that's part of what I'm hearing you describe, this as a part of the commonplace experience of people who are coming from that place, learning to recognise and receive and give care. But are some other things that you might like to comment on that are common in the ways you see people being impacted? Mm-hmm. And maybe, Janet, do you want to say a little bit more to that?
Yeah, I'm obviously, Liz probably have a more full view of this, but our experience has been that people come who've left Goreville, and they might have been out for quite a while even, more than a year or so, they are still coming to terms with the fact that so much of who they actually are was just squashed. They weren't allowed to have their own thoughts and opinions. They weren't allowed to develop their own interests and things that they were passionate about. One young mum said to us just recently that she's been seeing a counsellor, and when the counsellor had asked her, "No, so who actually are you?" she said, I didn't know how to answer that. Who am I? I don't know who I am. I don't know what I like. I don't know what I'd want to be if I had the opportunity. And so there's that sense of just continually being constrained to be what looks like it fits in the group, that you have to be a certain way. You can't you can't say anything or raise any doubts or make anything that would do anything that would make you look exceptional in any way, even though you may be exceptional in all sorts of ways, but you cannot ever show that because you have to be in the box. And that's really tough for people when they come out and realise how much of themselves over so many years has just been squashed and repressed. And suddenly, as an adult, how do I actually become the person that God made me to be? That's what we've seen of it anyway.
I think it's fair to say it's an extraordinary amount of impact and trauma. Particularly, let's just say we're not talking about the person who does a week. We're going to talk about someone who's really been fused with the group and has been impacted. The impacts are bigger and wider and deeper than anybody could ever imagine. And you could look at someone and think they're passing themselves off as doing quite well, but inside, the amount of psychological trauma is very difficult to describe in a setting like this. But we're talking complex PTSD as absolute minimum norm. We're talking people who are just ongoing states of depression, anxiety, grief, eating disorders galore, fears and phobias, hypervigilance. Oh, this one's terrible. Many leavers will leave the West Coast because they cannot bear to go into Greymouth just in case they see someone in blue, someone from their former community. They are on heightened alert, dissociation, panic attacks, very common. Years later, panic attacks, triggers, emotional numbness, anger, rage, disrupted attachment. Honestly, maturation, developmental stages have been stunted. John Reddy admits on that podcast that he was like an eternal child. He never developed fully into a man. He came out here with 10 children in his 40s. He said, I didn't develop. I had to create a whole new frame of thinking. You've got the relational impacts. They don't trust people because they've been let down. Practical impacts and health impacts and education impacts, spiritual abuse, questioning God, the goodness of God. Can't you imagine if you'd lived in a place like that, that said this was how God loved, the road to suffering, and then they made you suffer? Like, what does that tell you about God, that he is a person sitting on a perch, look sadistic, basically? And so you need to show the grace of God, the goodness of God, the love of God, shared through Christ, expressed through, you know, the Holy Spirit. We've got the scriptures. And if you can help someone come to grips with any one of these elements of the impacts, then you are helping them on a very slow, very long healing journey. There's nothing quick about restoring an entire person.
Can we explore that a little more? Just conscious that we've probably got time for this question and one more. So think about one of the remaining questions that you'd like to speak to alongside this one that I'd like us to tease out a little bit. But in wanting to, I guess, support people in our world, both individually, people we have in our families or in our neighbourhoods or others who may be there, what are some ways that would be most helpful when we have people in our world who we know are involved in a high control group or a religious cult, or something which has, these cult-like dynamics in it? And then, so individually, how can we do it? But part B of that question is, like, a church community wanting to be able to be a place that is alert to how to be a safe home and harbour for people who are coming from places and stories where this has been part of their world. So it's kind of the individual in there. If you've got just a couple of thoughts around that, each of you, that would be really great.
The one that's just come to mind, we recently had the real privilege of interviewing Dr. Christine Marie, who lives in a small town in Utah and welcomes members of the polygamous fundamentalist Latter-day Saints into her home. And she says that no one needs judgment, what they need is love. And she welcomes both leavers and people who are all already inside the group. And she's just got this huge push. You can learn all about the document, her work on Netflix, on Trust Me, The False Prophet. Fascinating, by the way, watch it. And just this idea of love and non-judgment, and they're so critical in maintaining relationship. You cannot talk anyone out of being involved in these kind of ideologies. You can't. It's impossible. Put it aside. What people need is love and connection. And a key academic in this field, Alexandra Stein, who we also had a fabulous opportunity to interview, she talks about escape hatch relationships. So cults are doing everything they can to isolate and separate people from safe relationships and to be the only attachment in the lives of these people. So maintaining relationships and being safe, not kind of criticize or make ultimatums, but just consistently show love and kindness with curiosity, trying to engage that critical thinking that's been constantly suppressed. asking them questions about some of the things they think. Well, what do you think about that? How did you come to that conclusion? Does that explanation make sense? These kind of just questions, asking, trying to engage their thinking, and also trying to go back to who they once were if they were recruited. If they were born and raised, there is no who they once were. They have no identity. It's been suppressed. So drawing them towards parts of themselves that they are yet to know. You know, what do you like? What would you like to have for food tonight? You know, just these things that draw them out of themselves because the I has been suppressed in favour of the we. And so, yeah, be an escape hatch relationship. Be someone who shows kindness and love. I remember talking to someone from Gloria Vale, I can't remember who it was, I think, who was telling me about being in the hospital because they were in the hospital during the time that their child was sick, and about how revelatory it was for them to have nurses come in and check on them and just do what nurses do, you know, when you're a hospital patient, and just show kindness, because cults always do this, them and us. The outside's bad, that world out there's evil. If you go out there, you'll be rejected, you'll be humiliated, you'll fail. There's no one kind out there. The only love that exists in the world is here. So to show kindness and love might seem day-to-day to you guys, but it's revolutionary to someone who's been inside a cult. And it's really quite simple.
Yeah, it's the unconditional kindness, and they literally do not believe it. So they might leave Gloria Vale, we'll organise a house, we'll set up a house with furniture. They cannot believe that that could possibly be without strings. Like, literally. And so we've got some young ones that we're helping at the moment, and one of them has just shared with her brother, who we helped a year ago, I don't think I want to get too much help from the Gloria Vale Leaver Support Trust because they'll make us want to, like, do something, like, go to take the leaders to court, and we don't want to get involved in court things. And the brother said, look, that's actually not the case. I've experienced this one-way train of love, and there are no strings attached. But they've never lived in a society. They literally do not understand that there could be a society where there isn't a string attached to goodness and kindness. So I think that's something that I know has benefited immensely these people leaving and our church community is them realising that people in Christian faith settings can sit around and dialogue around the scriptures, and it's okay to do it. And you saw the people sitting around those chairs on a Sunday afternoon, and some of them are not from Gloria Vale. Sometimes if someone's just left Gloria Vale, they're just going to sit and watch that. And like they're like, I cannot believe you like said that to your pastor, or that you like had that. You know, that dialogue, they could never do that where they were. And then you invite them, and they come and start to share and ask questions, and that's where the real joy happens. We often talk about, with Glory of Our Ones, not deconstruction of faith, but reconstruction. They have a faith understandings, and they are desirous to understand the Lord, but they, and when you leave a place like Glory of Our, already you're emptying your whole worldview. You can choose to throw it all out and be like a puddle on the floor and collapse. Or you can, often they'll choose to maintain elements of their life to keep their head together. It's very traumatic leaving. It's very difficult in the mind. And then you're helping them turn over the puzzle pieces of their beliefs and of their life. And there are times our minister talks about you get the edges set. You know, understand nature and character of God. Go right back to some of those formative doctrines and then work in to put the pictures, the puzzle pieces. But there are times where they turn them back over again and then they flick it. And then by the end of the puzzle, it's much quicker, isn't it, to finish it. And it's often like that, reconstructing faith with people who've left. And that takes a lot of time and patience and tolerance and kindness, and that there's no date they have to have this done by. You have to just work with each individual person very patiently, very carefully and very kindly, and not stomp on their new growing autonomy.
Yeah, and I think you asked how can we be a safe church environment or a safe community. I think one of the things is to be educated, like is happening today, so that we are not approaching people who've left a cult and expecting them to give us the answers of what it was like to be in there. We actually have to have done the research. We need to understand before before we actually start interacting with people, because it's so easy to say the wrong thing, ask questions that can sound nosy, that might be voyeuristic, just because we want to know, you know, what was it like, it might be quite interesting. For people who've been in those experiences, in those places, it's not interesting. It was incredibly harmful, and it can be triggering if we say the wrong things. We actually need to have done our research, and so, you know, I'm an avid follower of Cult Chat, these amazing ladies, and I just listen to everything I can, because I don't want to end up being the person who asks the wrong question and makes someone feel uncomfortable or puts them off the service that we might be able to offer them, because I've been ignorant. Yeah, so I think being informed is really important.
I think one of the biggest things people don't recognise is it's a real grief journey. They have literally lost every person that they had known, the only protective people they thought they had, and then yet often they look back and realise there was no protection for them. But they've lost their certainty of a future. They've lost their certain hope in heaven. They're losing the potential for their children to go to heaven. They're losing jobs. They're losing just their status, where they were in the community. Everything is lost and ripped from you in an instant, and you come out here feeling like an utter alien. And the loss and grief element is rarely understood. It's many, many years of restoration needed in that space.
So coming to then some final thoughts from each of you, maybe in relation to one of those other questions that we have sitting there, or something else that's just maybe stirred in your heart as you're sitting here and we're having this conversation, and here with our church community listening in as well. Church whanau, if you are sitting there with a burning question, we've got a few minutes afterwards too for some Q&A, so feel free to do that. If you need to caffeine up, there is still coffee over there, so feel free to do that. Or if you need to get up and stretch and stand a little bit, that's absolutely fine too. So, you know, just do your thing, do what you need to stay alive and alert and a part of the conversation. But let's come to that. Just each of you, as you may be gathering some final thoughts for us here, as a final. We've gathered today, invited you into our space to have this conversation, because as a church whānau, we want to grow in our love capacity and our wisdom in these spaces individually and as families and as a church community. So anything else that you'd want to offer us that would be, you know, helpful in this conversation?
I'm just sitting here thinking the word freedom, and how when we talk about cults or high control groups, or what the Victorian Inquiry are now calling coercive high control groups, is that that's the most extreme example of a group-based control system, the totalitarian, authoritarian social system. But actually it's a spectrum, right? It's a spectrum. This is down one end, and down here is the entirely free organisation that's life-giving, enriching. You can come and go as you want. You can ask questions. You can challenge the leadership. The leadership are accountable. You can entirely be who you are, and being who you are is welcome. And like, that's down here. So like, the more we understand down here, the better informed we are to how to be down here. And understanding the highly controlled worst case scenario of group abuse, we can understand how we see it in all aspects of our life. I think there's danger, and I think in New Zealand still, and that's where I spend a lot of my time, is convincing people that it's real, that it's a thing. The number of times I've said to people, we are like 1950s New Zealand when it comes to family violence, now with group-based coercion and control. It is real, it is everywhere, and while this visible down here might be less visible and obvious to everyone, lesser forms of that are all over our lives. And as soon as you start to engage with this material, you go, ah, that thing in my life back then, or that workplace, or that club I'm in, ah. And it informs all aspects of how we can be healthier members of organisations or groups. So I would love for people to go, let's take it away from the isn't this weird and interesting cults kind of way of thinking to this is how I can equip myself, my family, my children, be a responsible member of a community so that I can be part of making the societies and the groups I'm in healthier.
Nice. I guess final thoughts, being in a church context, you've mentioned there the freedom, and I think about that freedom in Christ, and I think about those scriptures that talk about the Pharisees and how they were just bound up in their legalism. And so one of the joys that we have is watching people move from that kind of faith-based journey into that freedom, and it's just unbelievable. We notice a big difference between those who come out and really do cling to Christ, and he takes them on that journey. Big difference in how they resettle, how they're able to find hope for their future. Quite different from the teenagers and early people in the early 20s who are leaving. They are the third generation. They're leaving. We had 21 of them leaving in a row last year in the last 18 months. A lot of single, that's people from 15 to 20 coming out alone without parents. And a lot of them are completely throwing away any of their faith beliefs and understandings, and they find themselves often in quite vulnerable situations because they're throwing out every part of their worldview. And so I feel like there's just an opportunity for Christian love to be shared with those. There's a mission field there. There's a lot of high suicidality thinking, and there have been sad deaths in the Lever community in the last couple of years. It's been devastating. And so there's, you know, you can see what happens when people don't have a community of people that care about them. But we just want to be able to share God's love with them, and it is wonderful to see them come into an understanding of him and his goodness. Yeah.
Probably the only thing I would add to that is part of being informed is having conversations with your group of people that are around you in your workplaces, in your homes. And as you become more informed, taking action, speaking to politicians, sending letters to say, because there's a real apathy, I think, in our community around cults, and I especially am always thinking about Gloryvale, that a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, they should just be allowed to get on and live their own lives. They're not harming anyone, they're not doing anything wrong, you know, just let them be. But the truth is so far from that.
Yeah.
And if the more of us that get up and aware and are able to speak up in places where people are making decisions, I think that's a really important thing that we can all do.
And that's something that we felt like we were living such a lonely journey within the Gloryvale space. We were shouting at everybody, the politicians and whatever, so it was almost like a bit of a strategic choice to start, you know, assisting leavers and telling their stories and having media interest. And since then it's been incredible just to see people joining together, advocacy efforts actually making a difference in this country. And now I don't feel like we're alone. I feel like there's a whole collection of people across this country who want to do better in this space. So that's nice not to feel alone. And these are some of the stories of hope. Just we get to go to school prize givings and see students receive prizes. This is the first time they've ever received certificates, you know, walked across the stage, had people applaud them. We've got two or three who've gone off to university, females, and got degrees. Like, that's just unheard of. People with their driver's licenses, what a difference that makes. We've got a family on the right, Zion Pilgrim and family, who had renewed their wedding vows instead of the vows that married them to the leadership at Gloryvale, and said that if my husband or spouse ever wanted to leave here, I would not go with them. They wrote new vows and had new wedding ceremonies. We've just got beautiful opportunities all around us to share. And there is a cult conference coming up, Decult, Labour Weekend. And if you want to find out more about Gloryvale, there's loads of books, and head to our website. And there's just a lot of work still to be done in this space. But then more are coming to Christchurch, so it's likely. A lot of people in Gloryvale come here. Don't be afraid to go to someone who is wearing blue, who is a current member, and show them love and care. And if you see them struggling to get something off the shelf, get it off the shelf for them. If they're struggling with their kids, go and interact with them. Be kind, because they believe that you're wicked and evil. And so if you can turn the tide in the kindness stakes, that's a winner.
I'd love this conversation to continue. Yeah, I'm conscious of time. I'm just wondering if somebody has a burning question that they'd love to ask the panel just before we wrap this up and hand back to Janine just to gather the end of our service together. So has anybody got a question? Just speak it out nice and loudly from where you are if you've got one that you'd like to ask the panel or a panelist in particular, perhaps. Luke, yeah.
Yeah, in the Glory Vale situation, it was, and often with the religious groups, quite classic sort of recruitment, targeting 18, 19, 20-year-olds. They were in the square here in Christchurch back in the late 60s. They ingratiated themselves with other church groups. That gave them credibility. And then in came, you know, then his Neville's true colours really were shown actually quite early. But they never start with the intensity that Glory Vale has ended. They start much more open because they have to find themselves a captive audience, and then what happens is they start tightening the noose, different people will leave, and then they get left with that core, and that's the core that they moved over to the West Coast with and then decided they would stop proselytising, they would just go by birth, increase by birth. So, yeah, it's a but they will always be starting with appealing to you, something that is of interest to you. So you just need to, yeah, look at how they treat people and what happens when you disagree with them.
What happens when you leave is a key. What happens when you disagree, what happens when you leave? And that's those are huge markers of the health of a community.
Oh,
I think of like when these people leave, like the burden on our health, education, social service systems are extraordinary. You know, like essentially these organisations are exploiting people of their personal power and financial, educational, whatever, resource, and then we as a society bear the brunt of helping them to recover, or they end up in prison. You know, like, honestly, that there are a lot of people who go into prison right now as a consequence. So I think I'm really interested in what's happening in Victoria right now. Liz had a slide up about it, because the recommendations from this inquiry are all about those system-wide stuff, about making a new law, about funding organisations that support people who come out. Because, right, there's no... this is a great organisation, Glory Vale Leave Supporters Trust, but that's just people from Glory Vale. If you leave the JWs, Jehovah's Witness, the Exclusive Brethren, Scientology, if you leave any of these small groups, there's nothing and nowhere for you. So first of all, we need New Zealand to recognise this is a real thing. It actually is real. And as long as there continues to be stigma and prejudice attached to volunteering or making real that you have left a high control group, we'll never get the voices coming up to say this real. We'll never get the research. If people can actually, the number of people I've asked, have you told your doctor that you were in a cult? And they've ever said, oh, they looked at me like I was crazy, and why on earth have you mentioned that weird thing to me? Or they go, oh no, I can never tell my doctor. I was like, really? That's terrible. You know, because that's the stigma around it. So we are unfortunately, it feels like we're so far away from making a political, social change that's large enough to affect this problem, when we don't even have the ability for people experience to even say they have, and professionals to know enough to actually be able to A, recognise it, B, respond appropriately, C, send them somewhere useful, you know. Like that's what I'm saying. We're the 1950s, before there was women's refuge shelters. You know, when people left Centrepoint, they left with what they were wearing, and maybe if they were lucky, some money in their pockets. And 30, 40 years later, it's no different with Glory Vale. except the glue of our Lever Support Trust happens to exist. But if you're in the J-Dubs, all those other organisations, it's the same. Clothes on your back, money in your pocket, no service that can help you, and no service that even understands what happened to you. It's like, so you've left a church. Well, okay, not our problem, you know.
You're just working with various therapists. Basically, it's very rarely properly understood, even in therapy and counselling circles, psychology circles. So the aim of one of the things we do a lot of work on is working to train therapists, and we do that by having your professional development, and we bring leavers along, and most of them will say they can go through 4 or 5 therapists until they find someone who actually even gets it. There's only like a half a day training or 0 days training in an entire 3-year counselling on high control groups and cults. There's very little understanding, which is deeply problematic. So that's something that we're working on.
I think there may be some more questions. You will all be around, Liz and Caroline. I don't know what availability afterwards, and Janet, to have conversation with others who may have questions that you'd like to come to them with. So feel free to do that. But just on behalf of the Islam Church whānau, I just want to say a huge thank you to each one of you for your contribution and the wisdom that you brought into the room, the love that you brought into the room, the probing and the challenging as well for us. And there'll be more conversations to be had for us, and I hope that the wellsprings of love can open up more, especially in our own lives and our life together for this. And that some of those wider ambitions and desires on the national scale around impacting, you know, the political structures and systems in you know, our wider life together in Aotearoa New Zealand can really start to happen too. So thank you.
So 10 years ago-ish, I got up on the stage, and some of you were in the room when I said, you know, this was my coming out here in an audience. And that was a key moment for me to have this community, not all of you are here because some of you have come since then, to actually accept my experience as a child and my passion, which has developed over these years, for people who have a similar experience to mine. And so I would say you are on the journey. You have been on the journey with me. You've asked me questions. And I remember Peter Hart used to keep on asking me about it, and it was at despondent times for me. His questions gave me hope to keep going. So you are on this journey, and you are all learning because I keep on talking about it. And so keep doing that. You know, just spread it wider than this place on a Sunday is all I'd say.
Just before we put our hands together, I'd love just to be able to pray briefly for you and for us. And yeah. So our loving God, wow, it has been very, very special for us to sit in this space. And Lord, a world, I guess, of thought and emotion stirring and circling in each one of us in response to what we have heard, stories that have been told and wisdom that's been offered. We pray that your Wairuatapu, your Holy Spirit, will guide us as we seek to not just walk away and forget, but absorb and reflect and consider and change. Might we be reshaped in the places in our hearts and lives, our inner world and our life together where we need to be. And Lord, for those sitting in the room for who what has been talked about is not something, it is personal, deeply personal, because their own experience of coercion and control and authoritarianism and trauma and damage still lives in their bodies and minds and souls. We pray for just your continued healing and restoring touch, and that our life and love together here will be something which helps in that journeying for them. So pray for your blessing upon Liz and Carolyn and Janet too, and their whānaus as they journey from here today. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Let's put our hands together, people, for them.